Now, all of these matches are going to be flown at different times. They are not simultaneous. And we don't have to do each match in sequence. We can cut back and forth between them. But the first thing that we do before we do any match games is play out the opening moves. The setup. The rival team. How are the rivals feeling and looking for as the first matchup is about to begin? I think I want everybody who's like playing one of the rivals to like, as you, their birds are like seated on the perches ready to launch. I just want a description of like what their facial expressions are like, what their thing is. Remember, these are extreme teens who like being extreme, but they're dressed prep. Let's start with Darius.
Darius has a, not a field doctor. His physical therapist is there with him and currently helping him stretch his arms. And he looks intense. He's staring at the pitch very intently while this physical therapist is like wiggling his arms around.
Let's cut to Torikoshi on the other side. You staring down Darius.
We see Torikoshi on the other side, next to his bird, ready to go up. Before we saw him, like, tapping that arrow back and forth and, like, all this nervous energy, he's very, very calm. We see him take a deep breath in and out. He does a double check to make sure that he's got all of his equipment, which is his quiver, his bow, and he's got, like, a single-edged short sword, like, across his back. He turns and he looks over to see Darius and kind of cocks his head to the side to kind of like, who is that with him? Is that... Okay. He's stretching. But he doesn't take long to look at it because he turns around and looks into the stadium and looks for Grandmother to make sure that she's here and that she's watching.
She's here and is indeed watching. I will say.
And when they make eye contact, there's a slight nod bow to each other, and he turns around and goes, well, let's do this.
Now, I would love, Rebecca, describe how, like cutting to, like, this is a quick flash of that moment. I think the screen splits into thirds, and, like, Rebecca versus Braith like pops up large. What does Rebecca look like right before her match? I'm going to say Rebecca has a swan. We don't need to.
I thought we said their whole team had gyre falcons.
That's right. They all have gyre falcons. Never mind. Interesting.
They like match.
This
yeah.
Tengu Dori is going to be wild.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Please describe how Rebecca looks as in this face off.
Rebecca is ready to go. She is in position, mounted on her gyro falcon, who looks very much like the other gyro falcons of her team. And her uniform is pressed. Her armor is ready. She looks like fresh out of the box. Like everything looks brand new on her. Brand new. Like it's never been worn. It's never been used. It's never taken a hit. It's never ripped or torn or anything. And she is currently sipping water from like a canteen, a very fancy canteen that's being held by someone for her. And on the other side, she has somebody powdering her and spraying her hair to keep it in place. Like she's like in hair and makeup right now before she will, you know, put on her flight goggles and all of that for the match. She looks totally calm, almost bored, and totally unaffected by the number of people screaming and chanting around her.
Cool. And Braith, what does Braith look like?
Braith is securing and resecuring some of the armor he wears on his arms and also stretching, because stretching is really important. And honestly, just trying to not pay attention to the crowd.
Excellent. And finally, like this, the screen will split back into thirds and we zip in on the last matchup, which is June and TJ Spicy Brewster What does TJ look like? TJ is going to be flying the on the defensive for this Tengu Dory.
Cool. I imagine that while they usually fly Gyro Falcons for Tengu Dories, I think it's a swan. I think it's like this beautiful white silvery swan that I don't think anybody in the school has like their own bird. I think it's just kind of, it's like TIE fighters. Like you never, there's no personal TIE fighter that you fly in the Empire. It's one of those things where like, it's just a bird that you ride. So like, they probably don't even know the names of these birds, but TJ is standing there on the sidelines. He has neon orange paint on. He's turned to the crowd and he's yelling and screaming. And he's like pumping his fists in the air. And he raises one hand and like firework, like a fountain of fireworks go off on one side of him. And he does the other side. And it's another fountain of fireworks. And there's a man, there's obviously a family just like two rows away in the bleachers. That is obviously TJ's family.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like 15 of them.
Wow.
So there's like, it's this giant family that's all there. There's a man who is the spitting image of TJ, but just in his late 40s, well, like with a beard, but he has like the same hairstyle and he's got the same paint on. And TJ is basically hyping himself up in front of the crowd.
Yeah, I think the crowd is chanting TJ's chant right now, which goes, "Turn up the heat! Turn up the heat!" Yeah, and like the crowd is just absolutely bananas wild over this. What does June look like, you know, faced against all of this?
June looks concerned, but not in a frightened way. June is watching sort of her teammates out of like one corner of her eye and then switching her focus to the crowd and the energy that they're throwing and then looking across at the rival team and this kid TJ really just going for it before anything has even started or happened. And she takes a second to reflect on that and then kind of reaches down and puts her hand into the feathers of the Saker Falcon. From where she sits in the saddle and just like reconnects with the warmth of the bird and the feel of the feathers in her, under her hand, and just kind of like goes inward with it and reaches out not to do anything or even to say anything, but just to physically reconnect with the bird and feel the Saker Falcon like acknowledge that she's there. Even though the noise around them is so intense and the energy is so bizarre compared to what they're used to, she just goes inward and reaches down with that.
Yeah, I think there is not a full-on like glint of gold glow to denote the connection, but like there's just like a little spark to show that it could be there at any time. And then we cut to, like, again, the screen is divided into thirds, and the horns that signal the beginning of the match all blare at the same time. And I will now draw three cards from the match deck, and we add them together, and you have below 12, it looks like, right now. You actually have 11. So that means you lose momentum. It means that your rivals are like more prepared or more in the zone, which is not a huge deal, but it does mean as ties come up during the match, they will go to your competitors. So on a loss, the player with the lowest card describes why the rival team is advantage. I drew a 6, a 4, and a 1. So I am going to say, June, because you were the last one to go, like, how is it that you are at disadvantage here?
Can it be that the disadvantage is that June is not as aware of the circumstantial surroundings as she should be going into a match like this, that like by trying to focus internally and reconnect with the bird, that she is not as aware of how this is supposed to start. And that's where her disadvantage comes in.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I like that. So with that, we have completed opening moves, which is our first match game. I would like to start with Braith's match. So doing that, I am going to put full tilt here on this array. Basically, the way this works, you are going to get three different match games, potential match games that you're going to be able to play, and you'll get to choose. But you can also at any time choose to play full tilt instead. So the way this works with this match game selected, we'll read the setup. Why are you off your game? And choose a suit to represent you being off your game. Above the general match board here, you can see the four different suits that are in this. They are energy, prowess, focus, and connection. So energy is like, you know, really how much energy you have in this competition. Prowess is skill. Focus is your ability to like tap into the mental game and like have a goal in mind. And connection is the connection between you and your teammates that allows you to, you know, perform.
So Braith is a little off his game right now because he's realizing that he is participating in possibly the match that will have the most contact with another person. And one of his weaknesses is predicting the movements of anyone other than himself.
Yeah, this feels like a prowess thing then. Yeah, because like literally this is the training thing that we established as a struggle for you.
Yeah.
That's excellent. So that's the first. How are you seeing your playing change? Who instantly notices? So one of the things that we can do with these match games and whatnot is points move back and forth, but they're kind of abstract. And in a joust itself, there would be more than one clash between you and your opponent. So you can like take a hit early on and it won't matter for the overall if it's just part of your description. Also, the way jousting works for mounted jousts too is you're getting scored on the force and impact of your hits, not necessarily on the number of your hits. So you can like take a bunch of hits and then do a big one and still win. So with all that in mind, like, please describe like the moment of you being off your game and how your opponent and Allie describe how Braith's opponent notices.
Does it have to be his opponent?
It does say, it doesn't. It says who instantly notices. So that could be anyone. And you are the person answering those questions. So
I want it to be Torikoshi, and I want there to be a coaching moment.
Oh, cool. So then first, Mel, I would love for you to describe like things going wrong in your first pass, your first tilt.
So can we, just to make sure I understand what, I know it's like a traditional joust, but what is guiding their path, their trajectories, or do they just kind of fly out and meet in the middle? And
so I think because this is not like, this isn't the free form mounted joust that we saw in Bujaneeth. The way this one will work is each opponent will start on a perch. You pass each other once without hitting each other and move in circles. And when you finish your circles, you like come back into a clash.
Okay.
So like there's the initial pass and then the clash. And after the clash, you return to your perches and, you know, you get signaled in to do it again.
Okay. On the first pass, I feel like we can be sure that Rebecca is, you know, giving her best smile and like just really throwing a sass face at Braith. And I think Braith is a little too far into his head, doesn't even acknowledge her and just kind of makes that first pass. And as they come around, he's like, his main focus is, how do I do this without getting hurt? I have to think about how to do this. as well as I can without hurting myself. Because if I hurt myself, I hurt other people.
Yeah, there's your guilt coming into it, too. Yep. Oh, I love that.
Can I ask a question real quick about the joust? I'm just trying to picture it. So when they take off, they pass each other. They do circles. Do they do a clash on every time they come down in a circle as they come down?
So what happens with the clash? Like, I suppose if both opponents miss, you will do another circle and then come together. But the expectation is, like, you pass each other once, like, you're on opposite ends of this arena. You take off, pass each other, do a circle, and then come back into a clash.
So one clash per takeoff.
Yes, one clash per takeoff, unless you both miss.
Cool, cool. So it's a lot of posturing until you get to the point where you know that you can definitely make a clash.
Yeah.
Cool, cool. I just wanted to, I was trying to picture it.
So like, I mean, like, you are definitely, like, the expectation is that you are definitely going to clash after the first circle. So, like, the only posturing that takes place is, like, that initial pass where you are flying past each other, trying to build up speed and trajectory.
Cool, cool.
Braith, kind of while they're going through the first circle around after passing by Rebecca, just kind of like takes a second to put his hand on Squall's feathers, give it a little rub and say, all right, let's do this. And I assume I have like a big pole. What do they call it?
A lance.
A lance. Thanks. It's been a while
since I've called a lance.
I'm sorry. Hello. So he hooks up the lance into the right position, pulls his shield just a tiny bit tighter, and Squall, upon making a sharp bank to the left in order to begin the first clash, lets out a large scree and starts small dive to pick up a lot of speed, and they go directly for each other. I think Rebecca, with all of her experience as an old hand, gets a decent hit on Braith. I think Braith just kind of, he hits, but dances off.
Yeah, it feels to me like there is a moment, based on your description thus far, where Braith flinches away, and that causes him to take more of a hit.
Yep.
So, like, you take the hit. It does not hurt as much as you thought it was. It's more jarring and startling than anything else, and that's because of the armor that you're wearing. But like, you land, and Drew, I think, like, the team can be like, your coach is definitely there, but I feel like the team captains also have the right to be up on the perch. So like, you land back onto the perch, and Drew, I'll let you take over.
We see Braith land. Braith, what does your face look like as we see Torikoshi kind of jump up onto the perch to, like, talk to you?
It's pretty obvious straight away that Braith is mad at himself for getting too far into his head. He's a little red in the face, not, like, crying, but clearly upset and, like, in his head.
The thing that I would like is anime style. Torikoshi, you are watching this from, like, the position in the crowd where you are allowed to watch, and standing next to Valkyrie, and anime style, you narrate what you see happening. Like, oh,
look at him go. He's going into a double helix dive. I haven't seen that in, gosh, not since you flew, coach.
It's a great way to build speed.
A beautiful way to build speed, but it's dangerous. If he's going to go that fast, he's not going to be able to, and we see the clash of them hit, and Rebecca get that solid hit, and like the breaking of a lance, we see the shatter of it, and the glancing blow that happens through Braith. I knew it. That much speed. And Rebecca, she's so precise.
What's your diagnosis?
Well, and we see Torikoshi kind of mind palace it, where we see the little birds in like anime-esque chibi fashion as they like line, like do their flight as he checks the trajectories and stuff. And as we see them like clash, there's a little, like a little explosion happens in the chibi moment. He goes, that's what he's got to do. He's got to be slower.
So now the rival team draws one card and answers a headway or setback question to set up the moment. So that was the first pass. On the second pass, we have Rebecca Crisp basically seizing on the momentum that she had in the first pass. She can see that her opponent is off his game or afraid to like lean in the way he needs to lean in. Although he was moving faster than her in the dive, she's the one that had the bigger hit. And the headway question is, who do you rely on for help? And I think in this moment, Rebecca is relying on her bird in that, like, she knows that her opponent, like Braith on Squall, moves faster. This Kingfisher is just able to dive so much faster than her Gyre Falcon. And the result is that, like, he should be able to make bigger hits. However, something is freaking out her opponent. So she relies on her bird to kind of lean into the intimidation factor that her opponent is feeling. And on the second pass, gets another solid hit in because she is making it so that her Falcon is intimidating Squall along with her intimidating Braith. It results in another hit. So now we come to the decision that Mel has to make. You can either ignore being off your game and push through it, or you can ask a teammate for help.
Yeah, I'm going to ask a teammate for help.
Cool. So we go to the moment that we set up earlier.
And we see Torikoshi up there on the perch with Braith. He's looking over the shield, and he turns the shield around, and he goes, do you remember how we were talking about reading scratch marks based off of hits?
Yeah.
It's okay. It's not like a beginner thing at all. It's pretty advanced. But he points out where the lance struck and how it glanced and where it broke. And as he's showing it, he goes, what's happening here? What this is telling me is that she's using your strengths against you.
What do you mean?
Braith, you're fast. You're the speedster. I've never seen anybody go as fast as you go. But it's not about being the fastest out there. It's about being precise. It's about being beautiful. Don't go as fast. It's going to take all of your willpower to not do it, I know. But try.
Okay.
Go slow.
Go slow. Okay.
Sky Joust. Sky Joust.
All right, so in this moment, we are going to draw two cards for Braith. All right, these are both great. And either one of these is going to beat your opponent because the card that we drew for Rebecca was a one. But it sounds to me like the suit that solves this situation is focus. So I would recommend you can also use energy for this because it was, after all, about Braith speed. Oh my God. It was, after all, about Braith speed. I am going to make these cards big so you can read them. But because you're going to win this no matter what, based on the numbers that you pulled, I feel like you should read the headway.
Yeah.
And choose the one that you like.
Yeah, I think, I agree. The focus card, how do you cleanly counter their attack? This is a really good opportunity for Braith to obviously apply the suggestion he got from Torikoshi. You can see him getting ready for the next clash, getting back up onto Squall and thinking and just kind of like, you know, you see him stretching a little bit, shaking his head and looking at the field and thinking about the last clash and how it went. But this is saying, how do I cleanly counter their attack? So they take off for the next clash, make a pass, but except this time, Braith looks Rebecca right in the eyeballs with determination and grit. No longer completely in his head, He knows exactly what he needs to do. He needs to slow down and think, at least not as much as before. He makes the pass. He makes the turn. He makes the final bank into the clash, doesn't do the drop he did before, maintains speed and shoulders his lance and looks at Rebecca, looks at the way she's holding her shield, realizes that there is a specific point on the shield where it droops a little, like her arm isn't holding it perfectly, and it's pretty obvious that she's gotten really comfortable with the situation and doesn't realize that Braith is ready. He can see that she is lining up her shot, and on the clash, that because they're not going too fast, he makes a minor adjustment to where they are and like kind of banks to the side a little bit, causing her lance to glance off and not break, and his to smash through.
This is the polar opposite that we were seeing of Braith in training, where he would hit the target, but then immediately get smacked by like the hazard. Flashing between those scenes, slowly Rebecca is becoming the target that Braith was struggling with in training. And then you make contact, but also like tilt. And we can see how Rebecca's lance sails past yours, and yours connects directly with the armor on her chest and explodes. And then we can see puffing up from the jars full of sand on the ground. We can see it is an enormous hit, and the crowd is going wild. So that match game is resolved. We still have a match moment for Braith. Match moments can also serve your allies. They can serve your allies by you establishing troubles and whatnot for them. So just an important thing to keep in mind.
I know what team moment I would like.
Oh, hell yeah.
I think Braith lands with Squall and he hops off and runs over and just runs up to Torikoshi and like body slam hugs him and says, "Hey man, thank you so much for that. I really needed your help."
Torikoshi like intercepts him. So like it's one of the, we see Torikoshi beaming at this massive hit that Braith did, and Torikoshi actually picks Braith up and like twirls him around and gives him like a big hug as he sets him down, this huge smile on his face as he says that, and he goes, yeah, of course, we're gonna make a jouster out of you yet, and he like slightly punches him on the shoulder.
And of course Braith runs over to June too, and
yeah. I think they like clack their bracers, their flight gauntlets or whatever they've got on, these gloves, they like clack their forearms together, and there's a lot of they're stoked. Everybody's stoked that worked.
And Braith to the side kind of pulls June in for a second and says, "Hey, if he's got a suggestion for you, take it, because Torikoshi's the reason I just won that."
Yeah, that looks like it worked really well.
Heck yeah. All right, and everybody remember you still have troubles, and you can establish this at any point. Okay, yeah. This is interesting. Looking at Torikoshi's trait losing streak, you've always been a standout player, but recently your performances fell short of expectations. It's a big risk to adopt a new style, but can you get back on top without changing? Who believes you should evolve? And what does your current style of play mean to you? Where do you go when you are most unsure of yourself? A lot of this seems like it is also built into new team captain. Mm-hmm. In the thing that you've been struggling with is not that like you're struggling with the jousting that you're good at. It's that being the captain has like really interfered with your training. And I'll put this completely in your hands. Would you like to say that you have resolved a part of this trait story with the scene that you had with Braith? Or do you feel like there's still more meat on that bone of being on your losing streak?
I think there's a little bit more meat to it. I think that Torikoshi, while he's become more confident in being a coach, like in this moment where he has given Braith this great advice and it's worked, Like, he's feeling really confident about this, but he has, like you said, he's neglected a bit of his training in just being a player, because he's spending all of his time coaching these two to go from basically having never really joust before to being like, we're going to go into the semifinals here. It's going to be great.
Sure. Cool. All right. Then I would like to turn over to Allie for Allie's match game. Allie, this is your lineup of match games that you have to choose from. The Leap of Faith match game is available to you as a person who is doing a Tengu Dori joust. But you also can choose from Bliss, Head to Head, and Are You There?
I definitely think Leap of Faith is applicable, like you said, but I'm kind of interested in Bliss because I feel like June is someone who takes things very seriously. So I'd be very interested to see if we could do something with that.
Bliss, you know you love this, but it doesn't always feel that way. Can you connect with joy when you play? And we'll flip the card over. So, the setup. First, you have to flash back to the last time doing something like this brought you joy. And if you need a suggestion, because this is a Tengu Dori joust, and Tengu Dori is like physically fighting your opponent like hand to hand, that could be when you were hanging out with Denison.
Yeah. There was a time during sword training with the captain on the Red Audrin where there was a lot of long work days and high stress situations, and June felt like she had stagnated in the lessons where she wasn't really learning anything new. She wasn't really improving herself. She felt like she had kind of not achieved everything she wanted to achieve, but like she wasn't getting any better, she felt, compared to where the captain was trying to lead her in those sword lessons. And the frustration was really getting to her. And I think this flashback deals with a moment in which Captain Denison like tricked her into having fun. And by having fun in the lesson, by giving into it's fun to engage in this combat together in this training scenario, instead of taking it seriously as though it was real, that June actually gets one up on the captain and remembers that the skills have been building all along. And it's not like taking a test where you get one shot at a correct answer, that there are many ways to get to a victory.
Oh my God. I want to do something truly disgusting and insane. Drew, I will need your permission to do this.
Okay.
I think the lesson that in this flashback, Denison teaches June is something that he learned from a man who called himself Pablo Naruto. And this man is, in fact, an alias of Travis Madigo. And the lesson is what we know Travis taught Jonnet. Not every fight is a sword fight, and not every sword fight is a fight, which is a nonsense lesson.
Right.
But I think the way that he is teaching this is literally Takashi's bell lesson from Naruto, where he's tied.
Kakashi.
I'm not going to be embarrassed by getting a Naruto thing wrong. Kakashi has tied, Denison is like tying a bell to him, and like June's objective is to remove that bell. She's struggling to do it with a sword, but we all know that June fights with fists.
Yeah, I love that.
So that at some point in Denison's past, he has fought with Travis Madigo, and Travis taught him this ridiculous lesson.
Oh my gosh. You know what? I'm down. I love it.
Okay. So I want to know, how did this lesson become fun for June? Like, turn the corner from being this frustrating exercise and failure to be something where June was able to find fun in her studies and breakthrough to progress to the next level.
I think one of the things that she had struggled up to this point with are the lessons in which Denison has her backed into such a corner that she has to allow herself to become disarmed, that she sees that as a failure every time. and that he's trying to instill in her the knowledge that sometimes you have to allow your opponent to disarm you in order to defeat them, that there is another way past that moment, that that's not the end of the fight. And June has really struggled with that. In this bell lesson, June suddenly sees a moment in which if she allows Denison to disarm her, like to literally clack the sword out of her hand and knock her off balance with a lunge that he does, that she can fall to the ground and physically remove the bell with her hands. And in seeing that moment, she suddenly realizes what he's been trying to say about problem solving and about creativity, and not just seeing it as a very binary choice of sword in hand, sword use tool good, defeat opponent. And so she allows him to disarm her with this lunge. She hits the deck, and as he lunges, like follows through with this lunge, she clambers around him and grabs the bell off of the back of his belt with her bare hands. And there's a moment where they look at each other on the deck in this flashback, and then he throws his head back and laughs, and then June starts laughing hysterically, and he's like, do it again. And then they do the bell exercise again, and she has to find new ways to either distract or feint or whatever to creatively acquire the bell off of his person without actually using the sword. And it turns into a fun game that they start playing.
Yeah. So then we move on to the next part of this, which is, why do you struggle to capture that feeling, and how do you try to connect with it? And the way that I think really the best way to frame this, Allie, is to describe, like, again, the first pass on this Tengu Dori not going well. Now, unlike a mounted joust, the way Tengu Dori operates is, like, you still have technical rounds. I think in this one, or the rules for this quarterfinal in this arena, are that you get one attempt, essentially, before having to land and return to perch. Basically, the birds fly around each other, and the aggressor, who would be June in this case, who is on the smaller bird, will try to leap off their bird onto the defender's bird, and you have a minute and 30 seconds to, like, have a fight, essentially. And you have to, in that time, deliver your hits, and then leap off to return to your bird, to return to perch, before you begin the next part of it. And I think the first, like, attempt in this Tengu Dori probably doesn't go the way you want it to, and or maybe even the first couple, honestly, because Tengu Dori, you can probably have a ton of different attempts, especially if they're low scoring. So yeah, Allie, I just like you describe that not going well, or going in a frustrating way for June.
Okay, so I think June is coming into this match against TJ Spicy Brewster with a preconceived notion of how she thinks TJ Spicy Brewster is going to fight or defend himself. And I think the first pass is June really assuming that even though she is the aggressor, he is the stronger of the two of them. And so I think she is coming into it on the offensive, already thinking that she's going to actually have to defend herself. And as a result, I think it comes across as she's not locked into her decision. Like, she comes in hot as an aggressor and then at the last second, like, changes tack to try to, like, be defensive with one hand, and it doesn't work. And he I think TJ Spicy Brewster is laughing about it.
Yeah, I kind of, the interjection that I would make, especially because of what you described, I like the idea of TJ fighting with two buckler shields instead of, like, any kind of sword or anything. So June, like, leaping off the bird, rolling onto the swan, and, like, climbing into the defensive arena, like, you are braced and ready to defend yourself. And TJ is, I think, like, in a kneeling position,
with these two bucklers like strapped onto his arms, and he is like his bird banks and like wind passes over the two of you, and he is waiting for you to come and attack him. And it probably takes you a little bit to realize that's what it is. And by the time you begin your assault, it's already eaten up a bunch of your off bird time.
Yeah.
And that's why he ends up laughing at you.
Because it's a waste of the time, and I'm losing whatever advantage or momentum I might have in the situation, and he can see that right off the bat.
That's great. That's, you're struggling to capture that feeling, it looks like, because you're making assumptions about your opponent and about how this competition is supposed to work that are frustrating you and not panning out. The second question is, how do you try and connect with it?
After two passes of June totally whiffing that time and not even getting close to actually getting a hit in on him, that third pass, let's say, she attempts to go for it as though it's the beginning of the match. And so she, like, that third attempt, she sort of tries to clear her head and go, okay, I'm just going to start over. He's on the defense. I'm on the offense. I'm going to go for it. And she tries the way she would have tried in a lesson with Dennison and goes in to attack him whole hog without thinking about what he could or should be doing.
Cool. So like that's your attempt at capturing it. Like it says, how do you try to connect with it? I like the idea, especially because there is a little bit more to this. Why does that not quite work with June? Like, what still isn't connecting through this?
I think my knee-jerk reaction is that it has to do with the fact that she has yet to see any kind of redeeming quality about TJ Spicy Brewster. She doesn't really know him. He doesn't really know her. That's fine. She's dealt with people who were bullies before. She's dealt with people who wanted to get under her skin before. Sometimes they've done that and she's allowed it and whatever. But so far, she doesn't really know how to deal with the idea that she is just another one of TJ Spicy Brewster's potential faceless rivals in this sport. And she, like, when she fights with Dennison, she knows deep down that Dennison sees her potential and knows her personally and cares about her. And I mean, that's even been true with Braith in different situations, and her other friends and colleagues from the Red Audren, that this is the first time that she's engaged in a competition with someone who doesn't know her, doesn't care about her, and will forget her as soon as this is over. And she's trying to figure out what the point of that is. Like, I think she's so used to the community of her upbringing and her origins in Thornvale and in the courier service that removing that community and making it purely competitive is so foreign to her.
That's so fascinating. Like, yeah, you clash with Fenton, but you care about Fenton, and Fenton cares about you, and you feed off of that. That's
absolutely
fascinating. Okay, so now we come to the third aspect of this, which is you ask a teammate, do you feel the joy of this right now? And that teammate gives an answer. So who are you, the player, or is June, the character, going to ask, like, do you feel the joy of this right now?
Especially with the ideas of, like, the manga descriptions and the anime shots in mind, I feel like June has to ask Torikoshi.
Rainy sidewalk lit by streetlight. Everybody stayed at home. But I am walking through the storm. My hands are cold, my heart is warm, and I will not spend another day. Upon the parapets to see the moon. promise we'll be friends when the summer comes again.
In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No King system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjack's role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more.